Welcome to the Film Experience Podcast. We haven't talked about new movies playing in theaters in a bit, so we have three for you today. Mother, everyone's favorite thing to talk about.
Ha.
Battle of the Sexes, which is, of course, the story of Billie Jean King's famous tennis match from the 70s, and a little indie hit called Beach Rats, which I think a lot of readers have actually seen now because whenever we talk about it, there's lots of comments about it. So to start us off, I'm here with Nick Davis, Joe Reed, Chris Vile. So I know that I'm as old as Methuselah, and but had you any awareness?
Oh my God.
No,
Okay, go ahead.
I feel necessary to say this because Battle of the Sexes is a completely time capsule movie of what was going on in the 70s. And I did not watch that game, and my family was not into sports, and I was very, very young. But I grew up very, very aware of Billie Jean King and that whole story, even though I wasn't aware of it when I was a teeny tiny toddler.
It is adorable that you called it a game. So already right off the bat, we're off and running. It is a match. It is a tennis match because I'm a tennis nerd, so I'm going to keep reminding everybody of that.
Oh,
Anyway,
so they don't call it a game.
right, they call it a match.
Okay.
Making it
So
more fun, there are games inside the match, but we don't have to. Right, that is true. Yeah. Tennis is an all-time mind fuck in terms of, like, you want to get into our sport, we're going to make it as hard as possible to understand the rules. So, yeah.
I'm a little embarrassed because I actually played tennis in high school quite religiously, so I should know this, but it's the only sport I've ever played religiously. But only for a short time, and then I basically excommunicated myself from that religion. But so my question to you is, since I know some of you weren't alive, did you grow up knowing about the story, or was this movie kind of like a revelation to you watching it?
I mean, I did because I got into tennis at a fairly young age, and so this match is sort of part of the lore of tennis, and particularly part of the lore of Billie Jean King. Billie Jean King was sort of the best tennis player in the world before Martina Navratilova and Chris Evert sort of, like, came in and kind of took over for that throughout the 80s. But she's, and as far as, like, American tennis and American tennis women in particular, she is legendary both for, for her tennis accomplishments, both as a singles and doubles player, but because of her sort of activism and advocacy for tennis, for getting, women to play tennis, for, the popularity of the sport. The entire National Tennis Center in Flushing in New York is named after her. She's a pretty big deal, and this particular match, while, doesn't really count among her, Grand Slam accomplishments and it's an exhibition, but it's so much part of her legend as a both tennis icon and a feminist icon. So, like, I heard about it all the time.
Okay.
I heard about it the way I usually hear about things, which is when Holly Hunter made a movie about it, which was called When Billy Beat Bobby, which, spoiler, whatever, which played on TV in 2001 and got her an Emmy nomination. I just watched that last week, although I haven't seen this new one yet.
And as someone who raised themselves on VH1 in the era that I Love the 70s recap shows were a thing,
Ha!
this as well.
Okay, so the reason that I'm wondering about that is because when they announced that they were making the movie, I was very excited because I love the story and I used to really love tennis. But even though I really knew the story, I found myself feeling like this movie was such a revelation. Like, there were so many details that had somehow escaped me, or maybe because I was way too young to understand all the implications of that story, even though adults talked about it.
Well, it's one of those stories that becomes, through history and through its sort of notoriety, reduced to, like, a sentence and a half of, like, Bobby Riggs was a chauvinist and Billie Jean King beat him and won a victory for all women. And the movie, even just from, like, opening up the Riggs character and just, like, the little details that he's a gambling addict, like, these are the things that, like, all of a sudden they're not part of the sort of historical two-sentence write-up of this. And the same thing, and then some, goes for Billie Jean King's personal life and the fact that she was, you know, now we know her as, you know, a out lesbian, but she was married to a man at the time, and it was sort of a long process for her.
I mean, I was, yeah, the first time I was aware of sort of sexuality in terms of athletes was Martina Navratilova.
Yeah.
But that was later, and I was, like, old enough to be, you know, at least somewhat aware of what people were talking about when they mentioned.
And gay. Honestly, where is that movie? Like, the Martina Navratilova biopic would be amazing. Like, defects from communist Eastern Europe, and, like, I don't know, don't get me started. It's an amazing story.
Yeah, make more movies about women, in other words. Because anyway, this is a very long intro, but I was intrigued by the idea of this movie, and I was so pleasantly surprised by it. I thought it was really good, really well acted. I thought there was so much information, but it didn't feel like constantly expository. It just felt very dramatized to me. I was really impressed with it.
So I wanted the dialogue to be better. I feel like that's my only complaint. I feel like the story in itself is well done, so I can't really, like, Simon Beaufoy did the screenplay, and I can't throw the baby out with the bathwater because I do think it's structured very well. But I feel like the dialogue is a detriment.
I enjoyed it quite a bit, but I think it had some evident problems. My biggest issue was maybe the final third of it when it's actually at the match. It felt really distant in a way. I really wanted to at least once know how she was feeling during the whole match, but it kind of kept us out of her head until after it was over, and focused more on what was happening with him, which I suppose is for the drama of it, because she kind of, I mean, she totally won. And
spoiler alert,
there wasn't a whole lot of suspense in the match. Yeah,
there was no suspense there, but I would like to have at least
had
even just a single cutaway that we could see her face.
Yeah.
Because it's such a long sequence to not really ever include her in.
Yeah.
And there's this final coda moment with Alan Cumming, who plays her costume designer, that is really moving, but feels like a stretch to make it relevant to today.
Mm-hmm.
In a meaningful way.
I super agree with that. I will say, though, the filming of the tennis scenes, and I know the degree of difficulty between this and a movie like I, Tonya, which I saw. I don't know who else saw it at TIFF.
I saw it.
The degree of difficulty with the skating scenes in I, Tonya is admittedly higher, but those scenes took me out of the movie every time in terms of the way that they were filmed, and especially the CGI. Whereas I didn't give a second thought to how they filmed the tennis scenes in Battle of the Sexes, because whether they used, you know, a body double or they got Emma Stone to, you know, learn, you know, professional tennis form, whichever it was, it looked great and it looked completely naturalistic to the era. And, you know, thumbs up to Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris, by the way, the directors of this movie, directors of Little Miss Sunshine and various, you know, music videos that you loved in the 1990s.
I also felt like it kind of, there were a lot of the things that I personally love that I know other people will not love about this movie, I wanted so much more from still. Like, I love Sarah Silverman in this.
Me too.
Ridiculous role, but you don't get enough of her. I loved Alan Cumming. You don't get very much of him.
I'm excited for Nick to see it because I have to, I hope somebody loves it as much as I do.
I will say one thing I was not expecting out of this movie. I was not expecting this movie to be a cinematography movie, and it looks
beautifully shot.
Gorgeous. It's Linus Sandgren, who did La La Land.
Who just won the Oscar,
Who just won the Oscar for La La Land. And, like, if I'm Emma Stone, I'm keeping him with me every movie I make, because he loves to photograph her, and he's very good at it.
Yeah.
Are you Emma Stone?
I'd be doing a whole lot better financially if I were.
But I, since we're talking about this famous tennis match, Nick, I have not seen that Holly Hunter movie. Is it readily available?
TV movie. which is why you've probably never seen it, but yes.
Is it readily available, and should people check it out? Is it good?
I bought a DVD of it years ago, so I have no idea how available it is right now, although it'd be an odd miss to not make it available right now. It's not great, but it's Holly Hunter, so that's great. You know, you're pre-invested there.
You can watch it for free on Amazon Prime if you are an Amazon Prime member.
Oh, great. See, there you go.
Holly Hunter and Ron Silver as Bobby Riggs. The late Ron Silver as Bobby Riggs.
Yeah. Did that movie delve into, did that version, even since it was a TV movie, did it really delve into the queer aspects of it or not?
Not the slightest whisper. It's about her feminism and about her trying to rally other women players to stick up for each other about pay.
Okay.
So there's a lot of that. Jane Anderson made it, who's the one who wrote Positively True Adventures of the Alleged Texas Cheerleader Murdering Mom, and is a lesbian writer-director who says the opening title card says, you know, the script is based on several interviews with Billie Jean King. So I'm sure it was structural that somebody was saying, don't do that or you can't do that. That's the right sort of set of people to delve, but the movie absolutely does not delve.
Interesting. Because the new movie, that was one thing that surprised me about it a lot, was that it's very queer, and because I just assumed it was going to be like a for the masses, like, sort of entertainment picture, but it's very much a gay love story.
And it's you know, really good on that regard. Andrea Riseborough plays Billie Jean's girlfriend in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't need another for the masses of entertainment movie because we have Mother.
You know what, one thing Mother doesn't include is a gay romance. I mean, everything else is in there.
The entire history of the world is in that movie and not a gay romance, so let's take to the streets. And yet Michelle Pfeiffer really is a gay romance in and of herself, is she not?
I don't know, speaking
for you personally.
Is it a gay romance when I'm that in love with a woman?
I think the story of your life is your gay romance with Michelle Pfeiffer. I think I can speak for you in that regard.
Well, I'm very happy that her title card just says woman. That makes me very happy.
Yeah.
Because she is every woman to me. Mother. I still don't know if I like it or hate it or love it, and I've seen it twice. But I think it's crazy that people don't even want to see it or just have a very concrete opinion when it gives you
people
so
much. People seem to be very adamant about the fact of seeing the movie being a statement in and of itself. And it's like, this is sort of what happens when an art movie gets pitched as a mainstream movie, and mm-hmm. feel like disaster always ensues. And I think this, you know, between the F cinema score and all the sort of necessitating of a ad campaign that sort of touts how much some people hated it.
And
ultimately, like, there's spectacle despair in this movie. It's just sort of, you know, not the spectacle that is necessarily enjoyable if you're coming into this movie looking for a horror movie, even a Rosemary's Baby style horror movie that I feel like was a big part of the ad campaign.
Which was so strange because having seen it twice, the idea that it's anything like Rosemary's Baby escapes me. So I don't know why they focused on that so much.
Although my whole thing is like, how would I sell this movie? I haven't the first fucking clue. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, I have no idea.
The thing that I find even more, well, no, not more interesting than the movie, but a little even more strange than the movie is the idea that people just can't fathom how to respond to metaphor and allegory.
Yeah.
Because I don't think those concepts are that unfamiliar through art.
We all read Aesop's fucking fables.
Fairy tales in general, and I just don't really see how that's like a new concept, but I cannot tell you how many times I've heard people online or in person say, but it didn't make sense. or like the story doesn't hold together because of this element. And I'm like, but it's not literal. I just keep telling
them. Girl, people out there are struggling. My friend that I work with went to see It, and she was walking out, and the girl in front of her was saying to her friends, like, I mean, on top of everything else, it wasn't even believable. So we're asking a lot.
But the thing about Mother is that, like, if you catch on to what the metaphor is and the allegory is early, you can essentially plot out the entire movie yourself, which is sort of what I was doing as I was watching the movie. As I was being sort of like, and this is where they come in, and this is where he dies, right. And this is where, you know, the house gets overrun, and sort of like, you're not like, it's not necessarily predictable, but it's like, once you sort of know the arc that Aronofsky has put you on.
Mm-hmm. The arc that Aronofsky has put you on, I see what you did there.
Yeah, I'm making all sorts of things. When Nathaniel mentioned that he was as old as Methuselah, I was looking for a Noah angle for that. So I guess I finally did.
I had a conversation with someone the other day, and I was like pointing out the biblical stuff, and it was like they had not even considered it. And I'm like, but how do you not, when there's two brothers and, you know, spoiler alert, one kills the other one and none of the characters have names and there's all this stuff about... Anyway, I just don't see how you don't look for a metaphor.
I think some people are looking for metaphors. I think some people are looking for other metaphors. I think a lot of people went into this movie looking for the metaphor of, you know, the director and his muse and the film, you know, the creative type, the, you know, drawing the parallels between Aronofsky and the Javier Bardem character, mm-hmm. and drawing the parallels between Jennifer Lawrence and possibly Rachel Weisz. Or,
I mean, I did that too.
So, sure. Well, that's, I think, one of the great things about the movie is that it works on these multiple levels and it supports actually multiple readings. But I think if you go in just sort of looking for that one and you miss the thing, I remember talking about this with Chris after I saw the movie, and literally in the middle of the thing, I was like, well, I don't think I got the thing about why Ed Harris was bleeding. Oh my God, it's his rib. It's his rib. And I was like, I'm sort of like, it's, you know, it's coming to me as I'm talking about it, which was, you know, one of the great things about TIFF this year was getting to sort of work through this movie with other people. And I don't know. But Nick, you saw this one, and I feel like we iced you out of the earlier conversation. So I want to hear what you thought.
No, you didn't. But I saw it in a perfect I saw it in the AMC Empire 25 at 10:30 at night. So I saw it surrounded by fucking crazy people, who just kept showing up like as the movie went on and then would be leaving. And like the person in front of me, like, totally screamed at their friend when they took it out like about an hour in. It's like, I will talk to you later. It might not be tomorrow. It might be next week. You took me to this shit up here. Like, this is great. And then I got on a Greyhound bus for 12 hours.
That movie, God, I didn't even think.
No, totally, could not have been better.
Yeah,
I was, you know, I found the movie kind of embarrassing at parts to watch because it is so forward with its metaphors and kind of self-serving with some of them. But I liked that about it. You know, like I did not loving every single beat of it or every impulse it's having. I thought the movie was pretty exciting, even when I wasn't always in love with it. And it felt to me like, in the same way that it's actually exciting when people in life realize that maybe they should like push through their anger instead of trying to stuff it down all the time, is like, well, this is a guy who's definitely working through his anger with us, and that seems kind of productive. And didn't even feel like the sort of, where Black Swan felt to me like there's definitely a pre-production idea board somewhere that says like, and then we'll do this and that will signify X. Like, this definitely just felt like my guts made this movie.
Yeah.
And Darren Aronofsky's guts are things we're all going to feel ambivalent about probably, but I thought it was quite an experience to be put through, and I admired a lot about it.
I think you feel this frustration too, in terms of, like, I know I have felt this thing when you hear about things like, you know, climate change and peak oil and things like that. And you're just like, you feel so incredibly helpless that there's, you know, the planet is hurtling towards this, you know, disaster that we've done to it, but there's nothing we can do about it, even on like, you know, fairly, you know, communal macro level. Sort of, I lean on the environmental message of the movie a lot heavier than others do, but like reading the movie as Jennifer Lawrence is essentially the planet Earth. And everything, you know, or at least sort of like this Gaia figure who sort of keeps the home and the house is the planet. Yeah. And watching the way that the house gets trashed, and the way, this is why I always go back to this, like, get off the sink, it's not braced thing, because it's like, it's such a, just like, get off the fucking sink, world. You feel this sense of just like, look at what we fucking did. Look at what all of us animals,
right,
you know, did to this place, this wonderful house. And all she wanted to do was paint it. And so, I don't know, on that level, I think I'm sort of with what Nick is saying. It was just like, it's so refreshing to watch a filmmaker just fucking go for it and just be like, this is everything. And part of me is embarrassing. And part of me is, you know, an embarrassingly literal, pretentious artist at times. But also, like, this is, you know, my anger and my frustration, all of it sort of poured out onto a canvas. Like, part of the thing with Aronofsky is, like, on some level, I don't think we necessarily should find great artists to be people we would want to know in real life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think I would ever want to be stuck in an elevator with Darren Aronofsky for more than a couple minutes, just because I'd probably, you know, roll my eyes into the back of my head after.
I also don't feel defensive or surprised that he, like any number of other celebrities, but especially the kind of filmmaker he is, would be like, I fucking hate you guys. Like, get me. You don't get everything. Get out of my fucking house. Like,
but at
that
the
makes
same
sense.
Time...
The movie seems pretty. I mean, I'm totally with Ollie Littleton on Twitter, who was the guy who said, like, I enjoyed everybody else's mother theories, but I'm pretty sure that somebody broke a sink at Darren Aronofsky's house at a party once, and he is still pissed about it. Like, that's good a reading of the movies I've heard. But, like, yeah, like, you know, like, our public figures have to be so careful about saying what a fucking nightmare it has got to be in their position right now, especially, well, whatever. I thought that was an interesting anger to experience, even though I understand a lot of people will give him no end of shit about it.
Yeah.
I wish that he would at least stop talking so much about what his intentions were in as far as these allegories are concerned, because to Joe's point earlier, part of what was so exciting and thrilling about this movie is unpacking it with other people. Mm-hmm. And I think the more he talks in these very limited terms of this is what the movie is,
right, this is what it means,
a little more difficult to do that. Because even I track what he's saying and I interpret that movie in that way, but I do also think there's some other things that he's at least saying he's not intending to put in there that make what he does intend to put in there more interesting.
I was going to say, I find that even more fascinating, is that, like, I do like the fact that he's saying, this is what I intended, because sometimes I get a little annoyed with filmmakers being like, it's whatever you want it to be. And it's like, okay, but, like, you had something in mind. And I like that he's like, no, I meant this. And I talked to, I think it was when I was talking to Matt Jacobs at HuffPo. And he had talked to Aronofsky, and he said, like, I have this. Aronofsky said, I have this. This is what I meant. But also, of course, other people are going to, like, you know, take with it what they will, and that is good. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he's, like, necessarily closing off. But what fascinates me is that there's this entire reading of him, of the movie, about being about him as an artist that he completely didn't intend, and that it's there anyway, and that it almost just sort of, like, exists in spite of itself, and it, like, it couldn't help but, like, birth itself into this film. And, like, that I find very fascinating.
Fascinating in that you think it's insane, or that...
That you, I think... that
you
I think
how could it be completely unintentional?
No, that I think that it could be completely unintentional.
Oh, right.
And that,
okay.
Like, it's...
I actually am glad you brought that up, because one of the things that I found... Actually, the thing I find most frustrating about conversations of this movie is people who try to shut down various interpretations because, well, but Jennifer Lawrence said this and Darren Aronofsky said this.
Right.
And I'm like, when... is it just part of modern culture where everything is 24/7 and there's just so much information about everything that we've stopped, like, when did people start accepting at face value what artists said about their own work? To me, that's kind of irrelevant. Their work is what they said about it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, why I don't care what they say about it after it came out. What they say, what they are saying about it is what's on screen.
Yeah.
And so, like, to me, I don't care. Like, somebody was upset about claiming, this movie's claiming to be feminist and it's not feminist. And I'm like, when is it claiming to be feminist? And then they pointed to some interview with Jennifer Lawrence where she talked about how feminist the movie was. And I'm like, just because Jennifer Lawrence got that in her head somewhere doesn't mean it's true or what the movie's about. You know?
Well, I think we've agreed in this conversation that other people are hopeless.
I just find that...
Which is also what's on screen.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, but the thing that I find interesting about that is, like, I probably sound like I'm judging everyone, like Darren Aronofsky seems to be judging everyone, but what I find interesting about it is a lot of these people I've had conversations with are not dumb people.
Right.
That's why I'm sort of baffled that people take things at face value or refuse to not take them at face value. It's this weird, like, when did people stop being willing to think about it from a different angle? Like,
I mean, it is sort of tough to not take the author as some sort of authority on his own project, right? You know what I mean? Like, there is, it's a natural inclination to just be like, well, like, you know, from the horse's mouth kind of a thing. But yeah. I think you're right. And I think that, you know, for as much as artists, you know, offer explanations for their thing, I think they, by and large, you know, support alternate or interpretations of their things, even if that's not what they intended, because I think that they have in turn done that with the filmmakers that they admired growing up.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe it's the Q&A culture and everybody being interviewed constantly, which didn't, you know.
Well, we have all this information at our disposal. Like, yeah. We have so much more information at our disposal than we ever did. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And it is also an option to not consume all of it. I mean, I haven't read a single interview with Aronofsky or Jennifer Lawrence. Like, if, you know, people who are deflecting so quickly because they feel like they can't get those readings out of their heads, like, well, I have one suggestion.
Yeah. It's kind of like my favorite thing in Q&As and that said in the sarcasm voice is when a filmmaker said, well, you know, it's ambiguous because blah, blah, blah. And then the next question is like, but what did you mean when this happened in the movie?
Although I will take the what did you mean questions over the allow me to brag about how much I know about film by offering my alternative thesis. I much prefer questions at the Q&As that are actual questions than questions that are not.
Questions what was that the one monologues. At the
In the Fade question? What was the In the Fade question that I found so amusing, Nick and Chris, at that Q&A? Do you remember where the person had like essentially like crawled over oceans of people to ask that question, and it ended up being like it
was about the tree being on fire.
Oh right, yeah. Did you actually set the tree on fire, or was that CGI?
Was that like CGI fire? And this was a woman in a balcony for everybody listening who was screaming from the balcony, like, don't ignore us up here. I have a question. And having, you know, terroristically seized the moderator's attention. That was what she wanted to know. When the tree was on fire, was that digital or real?
Why would it matter?
Exactly. Once so again, she'd
just seen Mother and was worried about
that. Yeah, earth. I was going to say.
Oh, that's true.
This is the great thing about Mother, too, is you really can, like, interpret it onto everything in your real life now. Like, subway confusion? Oh, that's, you know, I'm back now in this crowded home that I can't escape. And yeah. But Nathaniel, what did you think about Michelle Pfeiffer? I know a lot of people talked about how, you know, she was gone for the whole second half of the movie and I wanted her to come back. And in my head, I sort of find that kind of funny because it's like, well, Eve doesn't come back to the garden. You know what I mean? It's just like, I'm still very much in the metaphor of just like, well, of course she wouldn't come back. But it is, I can't deny, it's a more fun movie when she's around.
Yeah, I mean, what did you think about Michelle Pfeiffer? It's a really loaded question for me.
Two minutes of the podcast, yeah.
I mean, obviously, I thought she was fucking brilliant. I think it's her best work in a really long time. And I, as far as, you know, that she's not in the second act, I will admit that even though I get, or one of the metaphors you can use, it wouldn't make sense for her to come back. I do think it would have been fun and add to the interpretable nature of the movie had she just been in a different role in the second half.
just plays the Kristen Wiig role.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, I actually thought to myself, that would be so fucked up and confusing, but also still interpretable if she was suddenly just this other character who was...
Yeah,
I agree.
Because if you think about it, if you go with the all-biblical metaphor, and you say that since their character names in the credits are man and woman, Ed Harris...
Right, she is legitimately every woman, yeah.
And also that if you want to take that as Eve, but isn't she also kind of like the serpent? So shouldn't she... Anyway, so shouldn't she also have a dual role? You know?
One of my favorite people on Twitter, Guy Branum, tweeted after he saw Mother. He just said, "And Kristen Wiig as Judaism," which I thought was really funny. And it sort of made me like stop and think. I was like, well, wait a second. She is really only concerned with the words that he's writing. So doesn't really sort of seem to give a whole lot of attention to this baby. So maybe that is correct.
Wow,
that is funny. See, this movie's fun. The movie's more fun to talk about than to watch. I will admit that for people who don't like it,
which is why it bums me out that some people are getting so mad about it, because it's like it's so much fun. It's so much better to have fun with it, even the parts that you think are silly and stupid, than it is just be like pissed about it or snide about it. Like. Yeah. Life's too fucking short. This is like one of the...
Well, and also, don't you want artists to be ambitious even if they fail?
No, I actually think a lot of people don't. They might say that they do, but they don't. I think they want artists to do what they want, you know, what they want. Yeah.
And I'll say, I mean, like, this movie has probably taken up as much of my mental space as anything else that I've seen this year, and it keeps growing, and I'm saying, growing in my mind for me, and I'm saying that as somebody who loved it from the jump.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people should at least be excited that they have something to
spend
this much time talking about.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, even if people always... Even if it's always divisive, I think people owe it to themselves to see it, because it is not going to be one of those movies that nobody ever mentions again.
Right.
It's not like, you know, I don't know, any given thing that opens on a weekend. Like, a lot of them you don't even remember existed a year later.
Right, exactly.
And I think this is going to be a year for a lot of divisive movies, but not ones that we will talk about for longer than the normal cycle, but Mother definitely is.
Yeah. I will say one thing about it, of wondering if I don't like it on some level, because I keep going back and forth, is that I did kind of hope while watching it, and this goes to what you were saying about people just want artists to do what they want them to do.
Yeah.
Is that there was a part of me who was like, good, get that out of your system to give me another Wrestler.
Whereas I'm like, another Fountain, excellent, this is exactly what I want.
Because like I been writing various things about this movie and thinking about Aronofsky's work, and I really think the Wrestler's so atypical compared to the rest of his work. And one thing that I think is interesting about the reaction to Mother is I think it's like absolutely as Aronofsky as you can get as a movie goes. And so I'm kind of surprised that people who've liked his other movies hate this one, because I'm like, it's like the quintessential Aronofsky movie.
See, for me, it's funny you brought up The Wrestler, because The Wrestler to me is so of a piece with Black Swan that I'm like, I want to see what is the companion piece to Mother.
Interesting. See, it's so much fun to talk about. Okay. Wrapping up, let's talk about Beach Rats really quick. For those of you who don't know, it's about a closeted guy and, where is he again? The Bronx, Brooklyn? Brooklyn, right?
Long Island?
I don't know. He's in one of the boroughs.
He's playing a game. I don't know.
It is Brooklyn, by the way. Yeah.
And I know it takes place not in the now, because the internet's different, right? It takes place a few years ago or something.
They all have flip phones.
We did a good job watching this movie.
Sorry, I'm so distracted by this conversation about Mother. Well, anyway,
we've also all seen this movie like 50 movies ago, you know?
Yeah.
But,
you know, people are still seeing it. It's, it's still opening, but I thought it was really super well made, and I was excited. I hadn't seen anything by this director before. It's her second feature, I believe. And I thought Harris Dickinson was completely amazing in the lead role.
Yep.
Like the interiority of it and the fact that he blended in with non-actors so well is always something I find fascinating when someone mixes non-actors with professional actors.
I was okay with his exteriority as well.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to keep this on a professional level.
you know us. Professional all the time.
You've occasionally posted about the need to be able to talk about the beauty of actors.
That's true. But I was really sensitive about this movie because I went on and on about how brilliant I thought he was to a guy I had seen the movie with. And he was super dismissive of me because he hated the movie. He was like, oh, you just said that because you're hot for him.
Oh, Jesus.
And I'm like, you know what? I support...
You know what? Yes, but also.
Yes, but also...
Yeah.
There are a lot of actors I think are hot that I don't think are good actors.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to watch them be a bad actor if they're super hot, but he was both.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that's a brilliant performance.
He is really, really good in this movie.
Yeah.
I liked the movie. I also liked the same director's previous movie called It Felt Like Love, which has a lot of overlap. It's about a girl who's about the same age as the guy in this, who's also in a single parent household, who's going on some sexual adventures that she may or may not be totally ready for, but isn't really trying to wait either. One thing I didn't love about this was that I just felt like having to be steeled the whole time for the inevitability that some gay guy is just going to get totally take it in the teeth eventually. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, this is all heading in that direction. And there are just times where it's like when this movie's not like a violent movie, but you just know that the story can only possibly pay off if we're going to watch, you know, yet another kind of homophobic crime, even if we're understood, you know, it's clear that this will be about this person working through complicated stuff. And actually the movie finds a way to, I mean, that does happen, but it is not like kind of linger on that or shove that at us as much as it possibly could. Mm-hmm. So like some credit there. I don't think it was a movie that had 100% worked out how to end, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And seemed way more interested in this character than it had maybe managed to be about any of the stuff around him. Although the kind of pas de deux with the woman, the girl who's sort of in his life, is interesting. Yeah, I liked it.
I would agree with that. I think it's very much more successful as a character study than as a story. But I think it's totally worth seeing. And I thought for such a... I love when really low-budget indies, as this clearly is, are so beautiful in their own way. Like, they have their own visual style. And I thought the movie was very interesting to look at.
Mm-hmm. Which is interesting because it's also really rough to look at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts on Beach Rats?
You guys don't have any thoughts because he was hot.
I just was so blown away to discover he was British after the movie. I so believed him as that character in every way.
Yeah, I actually talked to somebody when I was in L.A. a couple months ago who had just been involved with a movie where they were trying to cast, and somebody brought in a copy of Beach Rats and was like, I think we should get this guy. And they were like, I'm sorry, we would, but it's really important that this character in our movie be British. And they were like, he is British. Like, no, we're talking about the main guy in the movie? Like, yes, he's British. And it wasn't until they brought him in that they were like, holy shit! And I'm like, I think... got cast right away. Have we pummeled you two into submission or something?
I guess.
Sort of.
Okay.
Okay, yeah. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening us go off. This felt as chaotic as Mother at some points, this particular conversation.
Our sink's not braced.
The sink's not braced yet. That's another reason I wish everyone would actually go to this movie so we could quote it all the time, because there are some good lines in it.
We talking about Beach Rats?
Mothers.
Lots of grumbles and mumbles.
Grumbles and Mumbles is the new Agnes Varda movie that I'm very excited to see. Grumbles, Mumbles.
Come to the film experience for that Agnes Varda comedy.
Grumbles,
Wouldn't
Mumbles.
It be kind of great if Jennifer Lawrence just showed up in any movie that didn't make sense and be like, what are all these people doing here?
I just love that Faces Places sounds good in both the English and French versions. Yeah. That it's villages in the
visage village or something.
Yes. I can't speak French. But yes. I don't know. That's a tangent we can't afford to go down right now.
All right.
Thanks. But yes, Nathan, it would be awesome if Jennifer Lawrence just wandered into The Shape of Water and was like, "What the fuck?
Why is that person a fish?"
Oh, thanks for listening, everyone. Like to thank Nick Davis.
See ya.
Is your sink braced?
I'll never know. I have no idea.
Do you not have people over? Do they not jump on your furniture?
I don't really have people over. You guys are the people I have over.
Joe Reed.
God help you.
Chris File.
Why were you going through his luggage? I don't know. Something from Mother.
And I'm Nathaniel. Thanks for listening to The Film Experience.